So, Kenny Omega breaks his silence. He wants to address wrestling fans out there that are vocally not as supportive towards Jade Cargill. Those that feel that maybe the attention, the hype, the press, the last 24 hours about her signing with WWE is overly inflated. They feel that Jade Cargill maybe doesn't warrant that kind of attention at this moment. And in the process, Kenny Omega has pissed off a huge portion of the internet wrestling community. Not only that, you have not only the toxicity that usually wreaks its ugly head, but you also have the other side that are on their high horses, and they use this moment to enhance Kenny Omega's words. Beautiful, couldn't have said it better. You know, more people should be saying this. There's an H word floating around in the midst of all of this. No, it's not Hunter, but hypocrite. Is Kenny Omega a hypocrite for the words that he said about some of these fans? I don't know. We will talk about it. I will give you my honest take in a few moments. But first, I would like to welcome everyone to this early Thursday morning edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. It is early Thursday, September 28th, 2023. Now, I know you're saying right now, DT, why is this on Thursday if it's Wednesday Night Dynamite? Well, there's two main reasons. Number one, we have a premium live event this weekend in NXT No Mercy, and we also have a pay-per-view, AEW Wrestle Dream. Now, I would love to have recorded this Wednesday afternoon, and believe me, most of the discussion I could have just recorded Wednesday afternoon and put it online. But a lot of you wanted me to do predictions for both events. And you know how AEW is. On their go-home dynamites before pay-per-views, they will usually announce 2, 3, 4 new matches. And to do predictions before Dynamite airs would be kind of foolish on my part and very incomplete. So I wanted to wait until Dynamite was in the books, see what added matches have been announced, and then we could give you more of a solid predictions, you know, portion of the show. Second reason why I'm doing this early Thursday morning is because late Tuesday night, yours truly and Kevin Castle recorded a 2.5 hour awesome, tremendous, strong episode of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show. If you go to DonTony.com, you could see the quick synopsis of what we discussed. And even the synopsis doesn't do its justice because we had so many discussions, not just Jade Cargill signing and the recent releases, but we talked about the current state of WWE, AEW. We talk about the current TV deal, future TV deals. We talk about, you know, big problems, Cody Rhodes, you know, some of the WrestleMania, you know, misinformation floating around, you know, what's going to go on with Fastlane. I definitely recommend you download that episode. And since it was done so late Tuesday night, you know, to throw another episode in this, you know, Wednesday Night Dynamite, not even 24 hours later, I think would have been much. To ask everybody to tune into 5 hours of programming within 24 hours is asking a lot. So I wanted everyone to get a chance to check out Kevin I's show from late Tuesday night. Enjoy it, absorb it, think about it. And then we do this a little bit later. So, and by the way, for those that are interested, next Tuesday night, Kevin and I will be doing Fastlane predictions. So definitely look out for that. Now, this episode, we're going to talk NXT. We're going to talk AEW. NXT last night, you know, we did a watch party and it was fun. And there was some good points about NXT, but there was some that were just fell flat. And I wasn't kidding when I said last night that the contract signing between Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov was arguably the worst crowd reaction I have ever seen for a contract signing, you know, especially for a world heavyweight championship. I don't care if it's the main roster or if it's NXT. We were just noticing the majority of fans with their arms folded. And no matter how intense Ilya got, no matter how prophetic Carmelo Hayes got in his passionate promo, the crowd just did not care. And the ratings reflected that as well. The rating went down substantially from yesterday. I will give you the breakdown in a few moments. We had a feeling that fans were going to start tuning out. You know, they tried to salvage the very end of NXT by having Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker have a tremendous brawl on the outside, which I have a feeling we're going to get an added stipulation for that. And this will allow maybe Von Wagner to return and get involved. And Von Wagner, I think, has reason to want to beat the crap out of both guys. So when we get to predictions, we'll talk about that. But they tried to salvage the very end of NXT, because if it would have went off the air with just Carmelo Hayes and Ilya staring at each other, I mean, it is beyond a wet fart. And fans were tuning out as the segment progressed. NXT's not going to hit a home run every week. You could have Dominic Mysterio on. You could have Becky Lynch on. You could have whoever you want on. But at the end of the day, you know, it's still NXT. And I think sometimes we get spoiled as far as the quality of the product we've been getting. And I tell you, you look at it 6 months ago, it's amazing how much different the feel of NXT is. And believe me, it's not just because Dominic is there. It's not just because Becky is now the NXT Women's Champion. And in a very short amount of time, you're going to see Chelsea Green and Piper Nevin show up there. And that should be interesting. And there's a couple other names on the main roster that are being teased to be brought over there. You know, it's fun. It's fun, but not every week they're going to hit home run. The reason why it was very concerning yesterday is because it was the go-home show for NXT No Mercy. And NXT No Mercy, you know, when you look at the card, almost every match involves somebody who is predominantly on the main roster. You know, and that's the strength. And there's no doubt in my mind, NXT No Mercy is going to be tremendous this weekend. It is going to be a hell of a lot of fun. We will definitely talk about it a little bit on Sunday night's episode of the Sit Down. But yesterday's show, man, I'm telling you, I think Carmelo Hayes, you know, I've been talking a while about Trick Williams turning heel. I know Trick Williams got an amazing response yesterday, and he is over with the fans. But I still just feel Trick Williams turning on Melo is money, and with no title on the line. So that kind of gives you a little preview that I'm going with Ilya Dragunov to get that championship. I think Melo needs to lose that belt. I think Trick needs to lose his title opportunity to Saturday against Dominic Mysterio. And I think maybe in some way, shape, or form, you know, they cost each other their victories, maybe by not, I don't want to say helping, but maybe something backfiring. But, you know, we'll get into predictions a little bit later. I think right now one of the biggest topics of conversation that we need to have is just three sentences that Kenny Omega put out there. And I tell you, you know, you kind of had a feeling that it was going to piss off fans because of what has happened with the tribalism and the social media, just that cancel culture, that hate, the wars, you know, not giving the perception that, you know, we're all a wrestling family. Nobody needs to, on either side, no wrestler in AEW, no wrestler in WWE needs to write online. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a WWE fan or an AEW fan. At the end of the day, we're all wrestling fans. That sounds like a bad John Cena promo from 10 years ago. But, you know, when you see things getting out of control, you look at Ring of Honor back in March or April of last year. And we're not going to do a whole recap and a play-by-play, but you remember, you know, the early rumors that started floating around that CM Punk, who still is not on speaking terms with Colt Cabana, you know, used his power to get Colt Cabana removed, and there were rumors that he was going to be fired from AEW, and then he got demoted to Ring of Honor. And, you know, when you had elements of the media who put that out there, because the EVPs do not like CM Punk, and Colt Cabana is one of their beloved buddies. Remember, after the fight last year, and, you know, everybody was stripped of the titles, and CM Punk was, you know, pretty much his name was removed from TV, they had Chris Jericho versus Colt Cabana. And Chris Jericho, who I absolutely love and respect, but, you know, he's a sly fox as well. When he turned around last year and said, oh, him main eventing Dynamite had nothing to do with the CM Punk, said, get the fuck out of here. It had everything to do with it. It just rubbed it in the face of CM Punk. Like, look, the guy that you despise, and you tried to kill his behind-the-scenes career in AEW, we just threw his ass in a main event. So now, you know, you get last year that rumor that CM Punk pulled this power play with Colt Cabana. And instead of the media world out there, you know, trying to clear it up, you go back to that time period, and when people were throwing that rumor out there, unsubstantiated, you never ever once saw them say, we reached out to Colt Cabana for comment, received no reply. We reached out to CM Punk. We reached out to AEW management. No, they just threw it out there. And their justification of putting it out there was that, oh, no, someone else put the rumor out there. We're just commenting about it. And that snowballed, and it turned into a giant snowball, and that is a big reason why that media scrum shit started happening last year with CM Punk, when he went off on Nick Houseman, when he went off on others. And during that 6 months of tension being built up, Malakai Black, people forget, when elements of the Elite behind the scenes fed to their media darlings that Malakai Black wants time off for mental health issues. And I remember Malakai Black is in his car saying, I don't appreciate management leaking out my personal shit. You know, Miro, Andrade, you go on and on and on. A lot of the Thunder Rosa, you look at those who have been fed loads of shit sandwiches since last year. And you did not see anybody behind the scenes in AEW come out there, not in support of the wrestlers that they dislike, but to calm the flames. They just sat back, acted like they didn't see nothing, acted like it didn't exist. And meanwhile, the IWC is turning it into a massive snowball. Not even. I mean, it's just an absolute, yeah. And when it blows up, you know, you realize these motherfuckers just sat back and did nothing about it. And even today with Kenny Omega on social media, now Jay Carlo's been getting a boatload of press the last 24 hours because, you know, when people say, oh, I can't remember the last time WWE treated a free agent signing like this. Now, Kevin and I, Tuesday night, brought up a couple other examples that I think some people forgot about. But the reason why you don't see this that often is because it really hasn't been competition for a very long time. TNA hasn't been competition in ages. So Jade Cargill could very well be that next mega women's star in wrestling. And there's not many in the back burner. I mean, a lot of people think Chris Statlander, ultimately, if she joins WWE, she could be a big star in the future. And, you know, Thunder Rosa ultimately will join WWE. And even if, you know, other women that are up and coming, but not on the Charlotte Flair level, not on the Asuka level, the Sasha Banks level, you know, the biggest of the big, the Becky Lynch's, you know, she has the potential. I use potential. I stress the word potential with Jade Cargill. She has the potential to be on that Mount Rushmore if she could turn her in-ring work into an elite main event women's wrestler. She's got the stature. She's got the presence. You know, her personal life is very positive. you know, she is a role model for a lot of people, and she's very well liked in the wrestling world, very well liked in the wrestling world. Just because you saw a character on TV, you know, being a bitch doesn't necessarily mean that she is that on the outside. She has the potential to be the next megastar in the world of women's wrestling in WWE. And that's how WWE sees it, ESPN, a lot of the wrestling world. And Kenny Omega decided he was going to address fans that don't feel the same way of the comments that I just said. And Kenny Omega breaks his silence, goes on social media Wednesday afternoon, and says, and I quote, "This may be news to a lot of fans out there, but when one wrestler goes from one company to another, we tend to always wish them the best and cheer for them while they embark on a new journey. Genuinely, it's embarrassing and shameful that some fans aren't capable of the same." It's pretty interesting. Listen, what Kenny Omega said is spot on. I don't deny that at all. But what's embarrassing and shameful is all of the fake, you know, news, the toxicity, the fanning of the flames, the cancel culture, the hate, the toxic atmosphere that has been generated, especially over the last 18 months. And no one on that side of the aisle ever went online and said, "Listen, guys, you know, at the end of the day," not even in support of CM Punk or anyone else. You know, simple, look, at the end of the day, you know, we're a family. All Elite Wrestling is a family. And, you know, people should not be celebrating because somebody is injured or somebody on a show, you know, when Collision was getting bad ratings. For 18 months, the Elite media, through the EVPs, did everything they possibly could to diminish the importance of CM Punk when he returned. And you know that is an absolute fact. I personally think, you know, the reason why we haven't seen Kenny Omega write a remark like this before, or certain people in AEW, I think it's because of contracts. Because remember, AEW is approaching 4 years. When they first started, a lot of wrestlers who were unknowns at the time, a lot of wrestlers got a one-year deal. And then after that year, when Tony Khan thought that, you know, they could be, you know, turned into stars, or maybe they wanted them to go to WWE and wanted them, you know, to give them a little bit of security, a lot of these wrestlers got inked to three-year deals. Some people out there got signed to a two-year deal, and then they were extended 2 more years. You don't have many. I'm talking about in the early days of AEW. Okay, now not everybody's contract expires on the same day of the same month. I mean, everybody is different. But my point is, when you see a lot of wrestlers that are in AEW right now, and you start thinking about who could end up defecting and going into WWE, especially Cody Rhodes, and Kevin and I discussed how important Cody Rhodes was, how involved he was in Jade Cargill signing with WWE. Cody Rhodes is also very close friends with other wrestlers in AEW, and Cody Rhodes is going to be instrumental. They're not going to do any contract tampering, but the minute someone is a free agent, Cody Rhodes is going to be heavily involved with some people going to WWE. And here's the thing. A year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, AEW didn't have to worry about something like this. So a lot of the names, the usual names that you hear circulating, like, you know, this person could ultimately end up in WWE, this person, this is not something that AEW has had to deal with before. So now, you know, Cody left, and I don't recall, you know, statements like this being made. And early on, you know, a lot of people called Cody a traitor, this and that, and then he made his return to WWE. And, you know, you would hear, like a one-line response. And listen, here's the difference also. Wrestlers in AEW and across the wrestling world did publicly wish Cody well. A lot of people across the aisle praised and congratulated Tiffany Stratton when she won a NXT Women's Championship. They praised and congratulated Io Sky when she won her championship. When Zelina Vega had that magical night in Puerto Rico, women and wrestlers, male and female, across the aisle, all were vocal about it. But one thing you have seen absent for 4 years are the same individuals addressing the fans online with the negative climate. See, Kenny Omega addressed fans that are not as high on Jay Cargill or feel that the press right now is overhyped. And he's embarrassed and shameful about that. But he was never, ever expressed embarrassment and shamefulness with the tribalism and the hate and a lot of the division that has been built over the last 4 years, 3 years, especially the last 18 months. So I think this is coming out now because people aren't stupid. They know with the WWE machine and their track record, not everybody turns into a superstar, but more times than not, they do. And they understand how big Jade Cargill could be. You know, you think back to, I was thinking about this earlier today. You think back to Gunther. When Walter, his name was being changed to Gunther. And I remember Keith Lee, who I absolutely enjoyed watching wrestle. He, at some points, he was my favorite wrestler in NXT, and I did not hide that. A lot of you know that. But when he thought he was sly to go on social media and take a shot at WWE because of what they were about to do with Gunther, you see what has happened since with Keith Lee and AEW, and then you see what has happened since with Gunther. And you see things like this, and none of these wrestlers on both sides of the aisles, you see it more in the women's side of things. MJF has actually made some public comments as well. He's probably been the one who has been noticed the most because he's the number one guy in AEW, and he is now standing up. And it's not just for his fellow AEW wrestlers. You know, he stood up for Nash Carter recently and others. You know, but what has been absent for 4 years is this side of the aisle within AEW who have never, ever tried or addressed their fan base online to like, look, man, this is not the right way to support AEW. Look, this is embarrassing and shameful. This is wrong. This is this. Why? Because you think they want any of their fan base to possibly say, hey, you know what, fuck you. Fuck you, I don't want to be part of this. They were always silent. But now, you don't want certain people in AEW to go on record and say something really stupid towards Jade Cargill or the signing or just, you know, falling into the hype. And then when she does become the megastar, that tweet will be replayed and plastered everywhere to infinity. So while I agree with what Kenny Omega said today, these motherfuckers have been silent for 4 years, especially the last 18 months. And now you come out of the woodwork and call some fans embarrassing and shameful. You know, never too late. Never too late. But now let's see in the future. Let's see when certain people are singled out. You see, I brought up some names earlier. When you see some people unfairly, you know, being scrutinized and a lot of shit sandwiches being fed to them, let's see these people come out and address their own fan base and say, listen, you know, at the end of the day, I know it sounds like a bad John Cena promo from 10 years ago, but at the end of the day, you know, we're all a family and, you know, this is not the way to go about things. And if you truly support AEW, you support everybody. And it's you don't see that. You don't hear it. You don't read it. You should not see unity within the wrestling world simply because someone dies or someone gets an achievement. And that's what happens 9 times out of 10. So I know Kenny Omega meant well, but their silence, a lot of people's silence is, you know, it's deafening. And I think we all agree on that. So, all right, I want to move on to discuss Adam Cole and some news, injury news, may not necessarily be news, might be storyline. We'll talk about that in a little bit because Wednesday night on Dynamite, he said he needs surgery. So we'll get into that momentarily. But I also want to talk about something with Malakai Black that I think you'll find fascinating. He posted a video earlier Wednesday afternoon. And the video is not really newsworthy. It is sort of because bullshit rumors are starting to creep back in. And it wasn't even a half hour ago when we were talking about how certain individuals in AEW were mistreated over the last 18 months. And remember Malakai Black, one of those examples, you know, no secret he is good friends with CM Punk. Don't know if that's why he was treated the way he was, but, you know, not only did he take time off last year because of mental health issues, he also had back issue. And, you know, they lost the Trios titles not too long ago, and you know, as much as I enjoyed House of Black, I, in my opinion, felt their run was just embarrassing. They won the Trios titles in March. They only had, 8 or 9 matches? And 3/4 of them were pretty much, what do you call, squash matches against enhancement talent? Maybe not necessarily enhancement talent, but, you know, just thrown together Trios matches. But they didn't even have a match at All In. You know, let that sink in too. But he put out a video today because fake news is starting to creep back in that Malakai Black has a bad back. Last year, some people reported that he might retire because of his back, which was not true. So he wanted to let everybody know today that the back is fine. But he also addressed his singles career. And this is important because last Monday, if you remember my show, we were talking briefly about the PWI 500. And as I went through the list live on the show, live reaction, I noticed Malakai Black wasn't on it. Don't ask me why I thought of him, but he wasn't on the list. And I had a few people after the show say to me, well, DT only had a couple of singles matches over the last 12 months. But if you go through the PWI 500, you will find individuals that only had 2 matches as a singles wrestler over the last 12 months, and they're on that list. You will see others who have had 20, 30, 40 matches, and 98% of them are tag team matches, yet they're on the list. Malakai Black didn't even make the PWI 500. So the video today, he addressed that he doesn't have a back issue. He doesn't understand why he's had so few singles matches. He does understand that AEW wanted to push the House of Black as a trios. But having singles matches, he doesn't get why he's not being utilized. Now, I went and I did a little research, and I was kind of shocked at what I found. Malakai Black has been signed with AEW since July of 2021. So he is approaching his 27th month being with AEW. Do you know how many singles matches he has had in AEW in 27 months? 10. And remember, he feuded with Cody Rhodes. He had at least 3 matches with Cody, maybe 4. So if you take away Cody Rhodes, you're telling me that Malakai Black only wrestled 6 or 7 singles matches in the last 27 months. That is less than 3 matches a year. If you were to listen, Kevin and I on Tuesday were talking about certain wrestlers in AEW that we truly believe that they would prefer to remain in AEW as long as AEW paid them well and still wanted them. Not everybody wants to work the WWE grind. It is not easy. You know, for some people, you know, you work enough where the bills are paid and your family's living comfortable. You know, you don't have to have a mansion. I personally think, because of Malakai Black's talent in the ring, because of the creativity of his character, because of the amount of work he puts in what he does, I truthfully do not believe that averaging 3 singles matches a year, 1 singles match every 4 months, is what he would be content with being in AEW. I truly believe that when his contract is up in AEW, that's one guy, if WWE was willing to take him back. And listen, I don't want to use this comparison, and it's kind of unfair, and I know some people will not like it, but I think deep down inside you'll agree with me. The void of Bray Wyatt now, because of his passing, you know, that just dark, creative character, sci-fi, if you want to use that aspect of the visual, that is absent in WWE. No, Malakai Black would never be compared to Bray Wyatt. Their styles were different, but there is an absolute void that Malakai Black could fill if he were to return to WWE. And look, I know some people could say, hey, Zelina Vega's there too. And WWE's treated Zelina Vega pretty damn good, you know, since she has been back. So I personally think Malakai Black's AEW days are numbered. I really do. Now, Adam Cole. Let's get into this briefly. Now, in case you haven't realized this already, when I record these Wednesday shows now, I will do it in segments. I'll record a segment, then I'll pause it, record something else, pause it. News comes in, I check to see if any updates. And then when we get to Dynamite later on in the Wednesday evening, I will briefly cover Dynamite and then put everything online. You know, I don't like to record an hour, 2 hour, 2.5 hour show, you know, starting at 10, 11 p.m. because then, you know, you get shit sleep. So at this particular moment, as I talk, Dynamite hasn't completed yet. And once I get the Wrestle Dream card updated, we'll do predictions and it'll be in this episode. But as I'm doing this, I got a couple of DMs. Hey, DT, what do you think about Adam Cole's announcement? Adam Cole tonight on Dynamite revealed that he has to have surgery, that he tore his ankle up in three different places, torn ligaments. He was at a bandage wrapped knee of ankle brace and could not stand, and he cannot wrestle. He has to get surgery. Apparently, MJF cut a promo that he will defend the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships in a handicap match as soon as Wrestle Dream. So now everybody, and I'm looking at it right now, every wrestling news site is reporting it as news that Adam Cole needs ankle surgery. I'm saying this as it's happening. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm not trying to predict, but I just get this real strange feeling that this is all storyline. Unless I see footage of Adam Cole under the knife, you know, unless I see the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships being stripped, if MJF does not defend them, first of all, even if MJF successfully defends the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships at Wrestle Dream, that does not mean Adam Cole returns next week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, 3 months. So you cannot have MJF remain tag team champion while Adam Cole is out recovering from surgery. So, and do you have MJF lose? Yeah, you could justify it was a handicap match, and, you know, of course he cannot, you know, take care of two people. But would you even want to put him in that situation? I just get this vibe that it's storyline. I hope it's storyline. I hope everybody reporting this as a news story without, you know, listen, you can't just, we're watching sports entertainment. We're watching a soap opera. You cannot take every promo, every claim, every statement from a wrestler and just report it as a news story. You're watching a soap opera. Do you report news when you're watching a TV show or a movie? You know, just because they didn't reveal in the TV show or the movie yet, like you're reacting in real time and you're reporting it as news? We're watching entertainment. You cannot take every word that a wrestler says while the cameras are rolling as a shoot, as legit news. I hope that everybody reporting this as a news story end up being wrong. Not so I could laugh at them, but that means that Adam Cole does not need ankle surgery. Now, some people are probably even thinking, you know, wow, could you imagine if Adam Cole turns heel on MJF? I mean, who would have ever thought that? I mean, MJF's the devil. And sooner or later, the devil is going to wreak its ugly head again. MJF is not going to be a babyface for the for distant future. They're running with this now because the merchandise is hot. Everybody loves the segments between the two. But that's got to come to an end. And it will come to an end. You don't just keep doing it. You know, there's a bigger picture here. We were just talking about the anniversary of the List of Jericho. Kevin Owens turning on Chris Jericho, you know, several years ago. You remember when it happened? Nobody online wanted them to split. People were trying to convince WWE, please change your mind. Don't have them split. It's working so beautiful. Everybody's having fun. There's no reason to rush the split. But when you have a soap opera and you have additional chapters that have to be opened and other chapters to be closed, whether you like it or not, something will happen. And same thing with Adam Cole and MJF. So as of right now, my early thoughts is that this is storyline. You could do the opposite. If you want to turn Roddy Strong into an even bigger heel, you could have someone attack MJF and injure the ankle more if he doesn't really need surgery. But I hope that this is storyline, because Adam Cole losing more significant amount of time because of surgery on his ankle and ligaments and this and that, that is not good. And it obviously throws everything with MJF in total disarray. So, you know, we wish Adam Cole the best if it ends up being a legit injury. But, the way they're going to handle the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships will kind of pretty much show what actually is true and what isn't. All right. NXT. Very quickly, I wanted to just bring up the rating. I also have Collision's rating, and I have the, you know, a little bit of the quarters. I just want to get into the high and the low point for each show. But NXT, big story. Big story when you think about it. Last week, they drew 824,000 viewers. I think the week before, they had drawn like 878. This week, they only drew 636,000 viewers. That is a 20% drop. And again, when we were watching parts of the show yesterday, there was parts you just felt that fans were going to start tuning it out. I will say this, if you want to look any silver lining with NXT's, you know, disappointing rating, because that's got to be one of their lowest ratings in the last 3-4 months. You know, and this is going into NXT No Mercy. You know, and you got a little bit added Becky Lynch mixed in with this, and they still only drew 636. The rating, they did not have any major peaks or valleys during the night. That's one thing that, you know, you have to really be a little bit happy about. You know, even some of the matches and some of the stuff that was kind of subpar, Hank and Tank, which I just was not feeling. You know, they did not have any big surges as far as viewership drop, which was, you know, at least the silver lining. But the opening of NXT, you know, obviously they had a few people that were, you know, tuning into the show a little bit late, because as Joe Coffey and Butch's match went on, they started generating 30, 40,000 more viewers. You take away the opening of NXT, which opened with 586. Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov's contract signing was the lowest rating outside of the beginning of NXT. It was the lowest of the second hour. It was the lowest since 8:30 when NXT was on the air. It only drew about 628,000 viewers. And let this sink in as well. I don't like including overruns in the ratings unless there's a long enough of an overrun. Like when AEW has a 1 minute overrun, you don't count that because 1 minute is 1/15th of a quarter and you realize it doesn't affect it at all. But when you have a 7 minute overrun, when you have an 8 minute overrun, now you're talking half a quarter. And during that 7.5 minute overrun, where a lot of people that don't watch NXT tune into the USA Network to watch the following show that airs, they had no bump. Zero. Zero. Remember when Becky took on Tiffany Stratton and they had that 7 minute overrun? They had like another 80, 90,000 viewers tune in. Here, zero bump. None. Lowest part of the show outside of the beginning of NXT. That's very, very interesting. By the way, for those that are going to ask, what was the high point for NXT? It was Trick Williams and him getting himself added to the three-way to determine Dominic Mysterio's opponent for NXT No Mercy. And you also had that segment with Tony D'Angelo, Stax, and Los Lotharios. And the Creed brothers showed up. That, remember when they were in the restaurant? And by the way, that was so goofy, that restaurant segment. You know, at least people had a sense of humor. We were having fun with it in the watch party yesterday. I was looking at the comments afterwards, but you look at the Tony D character and the mafia and Stax and everything, and then you try to envision them in an Italian restaurant. And they're bringing in two Irish guys in the Creed brothers. And you're bringing in two Spanish guys in Los Lotharios. And then you bring in two guys that look like they're from Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Like, you don't see that. Like, it was just really over the top goofy. But that's what NXT is from time to time. And I'm not trying to, like, justify it or defend it. You know, you got to take the wackiness with it. But when you are used to, you know, much better quality programming on Tuesday nights, and then you get hit with stuff like this, you know, especially going into NXT No Mercy, that is a little bit cause of concern. It is. All right, so now we move on to Collision's rating from this past Saturday, September 23rd. You got to give them credit. Their rating went up almost 20%. You know, fans are starting to get used to a much different Collision. You know, not just one without CM Punk, but one that is not focused as much as far as FTR goes. They're still part of the show, but you could feel, you know, how different everything is. You see some individuals performing on Saturdays that, you know, would not have performed on Saturdays if CM Punk was still around. But this week, they drew 562,000 viewers. That is up from the previous week's 467. Now, throughout the night, they pretty much maintained their viewership. Actually, if you get your hands on the quarter-hour breakdowns for NXT and Collision, they are very, very similar. I mean, NXT scored a little bit higher in the numbers, but if you look at the trend throughout the night, very, very similar. One quarter in particular for Collision, which I find very interesting, is that for some reason, the quarter that had Kiera Hogan and Julie Hart, but they also had Andrade versus Jay White. That quarter jumped 100,000 viewers. That was the high point of the night of 627. Problem is, as Andrade and Jay White continued into the beginning of hour number two, they lost about 45,000 viewers, and they continued to slowly lose some viewers. They had a little bit of a bump, you know, towards the second half of Collision. But even Bryan Danielson versus Ricky Starks, Texas Deathmatch, I kid you not, that was the lowest quarter for the second hour. And it was almost the lowest quarter of the entire night. There were only two quarters that were lower, and not by much. Brian Danielson versus Ricky Starks drew 545. The opening of Collision scored 544. It's only a 1,000 viewership difference. And Hook and RVD versus 2.0 drew 520. So, you know, Brian Danielson and Ricky Starks' Texas Deathmatch could have ended up being the lowest rating of the entire night for Collision, which is very surprising because to me, as I've said before, outside of MJF, Brian Danielson is the guy in that company. And it's a little surprising to see fans tuning out because their match started in quarter seven and they actually lost about 40,000 viewers as the match went on. And I'm kind of baffled at that. If you're watching Collision, and Collision is going to go off the air in 15 minutes, and you see the very beginning of Ricky Starks and Brian Danielson, how do you get 40,000 fans, 30,000 fans to say, you know what, I've had enough. I'm going to change the channel. And not return? Yeah, a little confusing. Okay, we're going to start bringing this home. I know, again, this is a little bit of a shorter episode, but number one, we did so much content. I want everybody to enjoy it and be able to have an opportunity to hear it. But, you know, as you can hear too, I'm doing this in the wee hours of Thursday morning. I got to get my ass some sleep. So let's do quickly predictions for NXT No Mercy. And then we'll do predictions for AEW Wrestle Dream. And, you know, as far as NXT No Mercy, as of right now, they have six matches announced. Now, there's another match that could be on the pre-show. Remember Kalani Jordan? And she was in that storyline with Dana Brooke. And Dana Brooke was going to ultimately turn on Kalani Jordan. They were going to feud. Now, Dana Brooke was released. So what do you do with Kalani Jordan? Well, when Blair Davenport and Gigi Dolan had their brawl on NXT Tuesday night, they were supposed to have a match. The match was scrapped because they didn't have enough time. A lot of us thought that that match would end up at NXT No Mercy. Blair Davenport versus Gigi Dolan, you know, especially if you do a little stipulation with it, could actually be pretty good on NXT No Mercy. But they didn't advertise that. Instead, we got a bonus video on social media after NXT went off the air, and Kalani Jordan's being interviewed. And in her interview, she challenges Blair Davenport at NXT No Mercy. I'm a little surprised at that. Because as much as Kalani Jordan is cute, she has got some talent, but she is still a loads ways away from not only being good in the ring, but, you know, 90% of people out there don't even know who she is. Why is she getting an NXT No Mercy match? Then now, again, it hasn't been advertised yet, but she actually said that in her promo. So that could end up being added. Personally, if anything gets added, Blair Davenport has got to get a win. You know, she had that feud recently with Roxanne Perez, and she ended up being on the losing end at the end of the day. Blair Davenport, listen, Lyra Vicaria is next in line to get the opportunity on the main roster. She may not be the next one to be brought up, but she's going to be the next one that's going to be taken very seriously on that main roster. But not too far behind her is Blair Davenport. Blair Davenport will be on that main roster. It's sooner than later, unless something happens where she wants to exit WWE, which I don't see happening. So as of right now, for NXT No Mercy, we got six matches. Tony D'Angelo and Stax will be defending the NXT Tag Team Championships in a fatal four-way. They're going to be taking on the Creed Brothers, Los Lotarios, which is Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza, and OTM, which is Lucien Price and Bronco Nima. Scripps, Reggie, is their manager. I am feeling Lucien Price and Bronco Nima's characters. They are still new, and they're still learning, and they still got a long ways away. I love the Grand Theft Auto vibe with their entrance, their graphics, their look, everything retro Grand Theft Auto. Freaking love it. This fatal four-way, though, outside of the Creed Brothers, you know, Los Lotarios, I mean, they're legit, but they're not being treated as high as they should. Tony D'Angelo and Stacks, as far as I know, has only defended that title once or twice since they won it. And they have had no impressive run. It's been ridiculous. There's no way they drop those titles this soon. Because outside of one or two title defenses for months, you can't. It would be considered a colossal failure. So Tony D and Stacks will retain. I don't. It's not even a question. They will retain. Noam Dar will be defending the NXT Heritage Cup. It's going to be the British Rounds Rules. And he's going to be taking on Butch, the former Pete Dunne. Now, I love that they have Butch on this show. And Butch is legit. I mean, I don't think any of it, he has to convince anyone. I think Butch's role in this is to just give not only a real top quality match for Noam Dar, but also to give Noam Dar a substantial win amongst his NXT return. You know, we remember Noam Dar, you know, Alicia Fox. Remember Alicia Fox? Noam Dar is talented. And it's funny because when they started doing the metaphor stuff, I couldn't stand it. I mean, I literally wanted to change the channel when they were on. Now I'm actually feeling it a little bit. They're starting to grow on me. Metaphor, as wacky and, you know, just outrageous as they are, you know, as goofy as it is at times, they're starting to grow on me. I think Noam Dar will get this win. I can't see Butch walking around with the Heritage Cup. Even if he shows up on SmackDown for fight night and he's got the Heritage Cup in his hand, I just don't see it. I'm going to go with Noam Dar to beat Butch. We have Bron Breakker versus Baron Corbin. Now, as I said at the beginning of this episode, NXT closed out with them brawling in the parking lot. They ended up breaking through a wall, which happened to be part of Shawn Michaels' office. And they had to close it out with chaos because Ilya and Carmelo Hayes, it just bombed. I'm a fan of both. Ilya is my favorite wrestler currently on the NXT roster. And I will even say they bombed. Nobody cared. And if they would have gone off the air with them just staring at each other, people would have been, oh, I'm not feeling this event, this card at all. So they did chaos to close it out. I'm a little surprised that a stipulation was not added to it. I get it. Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton is Extreme Rules. But I'm a little surprised that it's still a regular match. I hope they decide to add a stipulation to it between now and Saturday. But as of right now, I see Bron Breakker beating Baron Corbin. But I also see the possibility where Von Wagner is going to show up. And this could end up in a no contest. Because Von Wagner has reason. I mean, obviously, Bron Breakker, what he did to Von Wagner, sending him to the hospital, that in itself is reason why Von Wagner wants to kill Bron Breakker. But Baron Corbin also has been a total prick and an asshole about Von Wagner as well. So Von Wagner would have no issue to taking out Baron Corbin as well. He's not a fan of either. So I could see Von Wagner causing chaos for both guys. That's why even more I wish they add a stip. Maybe a no DQ stip or something. Because if Von Wagner shows up and he could get involved and it doesn't cost anybody the match, I think fans would rather see that. But then again, you know, Baron Corbin, hey, he's got a decent WWE career. Went a lot farther, I think, any of us ever expected. Yeah, he's doing NXT stuff right now. Bron Breakker has lost, you know, maybe a few too many matches over the last bunch of months. So I feel if anybody needs a little momentum right now, it's Bron Breakker. But I also think Von Wagner showing up is a very strong possibility. I'm going with either Bron Breakker or Von Wagner causes complete chaos and we have no winner. Dominic Mysterio defending the NXT North American Championship against Trick Williams. After watching Raw Monday, I want the Dragon Lee to get the rematch. The more I thought about it, the more I was against it, and I'll tell you why. When Trick Williams on NXT Tuesday night got himself added to the triple threat, and they turned it into a fatal four-way to determine Dominic's new opponent because he was supposed to originally face Mustafa Ali. Then it hit me. The next time Dragon Lee gets his hands on Dominic Mysterio, he has to win that championship. As of right now, every member of Judgment Day has gold. You're not going to have Dominic Mysterio be the only one in Judgment Day without gold right now. Now, JD McDonagh ultimately will be part of Judgment Day. And Kevin, I even threw a wild scenario on Tuesday. No, we don't believe it will happen, but hey, the fact that Piper Nevin just grabbed the championship and she's recognized as one half of the women's tag team champions right now, wouldn't that be something? If Dominic Mysterio loses the NXT North American Championship, JD McDonagh is a part of Judgment Day, and then Finn Balor and Damian Priest decide they're going to give one set of their tag team championships to Dominic Mysterio and JD McDonagh. So Dominic could lose the NXT North American Championship, and then he and JD McDonagh could have one set of those tag team titles. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I know people out there are going to be like, DT, that's nuts. I agree. That's why Piper Nevin should not have the championship right now either. But the next time Dragon Lee faces Dominic Mysterio, Dragon Lee needs to be that champion. And they are not ready to take that belt off of Dominic Mysterio. So I am going with Dominic Mysterio to beat Trick Williams. I hope the match is good because their styles are completely different. But people are still asking me, DT, do you really still think Trick Williams is going to turn on Melo? Trick Williams is one of the most over guys in NXT. A lot of people are starting to think Melo will turn on Trick Williams. I don't see it. I don't see it. I think Trick Williams still will ultimately turn on Melo. Sometimes people turn and they could be over like Rover. You know, we were just talking about what happened with Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. Nobody wanted them to split, you know, but I still think I want to see Ilya win this championship on Saturday. And yes, I'm giving you that call now because it kind of intertwines with Trick Williams. Trick Williams doesn't want Melo's help. He wants his support. He doesn't want his help. He wants to do things himself. Melo is focused. Melo has got so much going on with Ilya that he kind of like pushes Trick Williams aside as well. I'm not saying Trick will be by Melo's side Saturday, and I'm not saying Melo will be by Trick's side Saturday. But we could see a situation where, I'm just throwing a wild scenario out there. Rhea Ripley will be there. Rhea Ripley will get involved in this match. She will keep interfering with Trick Williams with the referee not looking. And Trick Williams will be pissed off that Carmelo Hayes did not even try to come out there to, you know, even up the odds with Rhea Ripley. That I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that could be a scenario that makes sense where Trick Williams loses because of Rhea Ripley's interference and Trick Williams is a little pissed off that Carmelo Hayes, you know, just didn't watch, didn't have his back. You know, when it was 2-on-1 and other people got involved, Trick was left there to defend on his own. Melo later on takes on Ilya, and maybe we have something where Trick Williams shows up at ringside, and maybe, you know, something's going on, and maybe something backfires. I'm not saying Trick Williams will turn on Melo Saturday, but I think they both need to lose. I think Melo needs to lose. I think Trick Williams needs to lose. Yes. For people out there that disagree about the NXT Championship match, Carmelo Hayes could retain and still feud with Trick Williams. I just feel because Trick Williams, no matter how popular, how over he is, people don't realize how few matches Trick Williams has had in his career. You'd be kind of shocked if you looked it up and see how few matches he's had in his career. Trick Williams is not ready to become a world champion. And I feel that if Trick Williams feuds with Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams has got to get a win or two. By cheating, by whatever, you don't want that championship lingering. Because then you can't have Trick Williams win unless there's a DQ or some bullshit attached to it. there's no titles on the line. They could trade wins in this feud. And meanwhile, Ilya gets his acknowledgement. Ilya Dragunov is, to me, the number one guy in that company next to Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker is destined to the main roster. Ilya, I hope in the future, but right now, as far as talent goes, Ilya is the guy. Melo has a crazy bright future. Trick has a crazy bright future, but right now I think Ilya needs to get that title. He's had too many match of the year candidates for NXT standards, you know, in the last 2 years. He's got to get recognized as champion. This might be the fan in me talking more than actually analyzing, but I'm going with Ilya simply because I want him to win. So that leaves us Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton Extreme Rules for the NXT Women's Championship. I think we all agree Becky Lynch is going to win. She's going to retain. It's too soon for Becky to drop that title. They're already teasing Tegan Knox versus Becky Lynch on Raw, which will happen. I like the idea of the Extreme Rules match for a couple of reasons. If you saw the footage that I played on last Saturday's Don Tony Show episode, Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton on the house show circuit are tearing it up. But you're watching little clips, little pieces of the matches. When you watch the whole match from bell to bell, Tiffany Stratton still has a way to go. But she's learning on the job, and she's learning from one of the best. So that's why when people were so irate, oh, how could you do that to Tiffany Stratton? Give Becky the belt. Becky don't need the belt. That, you know, hurts Tiffany. No, it doesn't. Tiffany Stratton is getting a lesson of a lifetime right now, and it's just making her better. Doing Extreme Rules will hide a lot of the, you know, the flow that they've been doing in a wrestling match that has not been as polished as many, I guess, would expect, especially since there's more eyes on the product. So Extreme Rules, anything goes. Now you got to think in the back of your mind, we may get some interference. We may see Kiana James get involved. We may see Lyra Vicaria get involved. We may see somebody else show up that we haven't seen in a while get involved. So this allows storyline shifts. So we don't have to worry about DQs. We don't have to worry about everything focused with wrestling moves. You will see wrestling moves, but doing the weapons kind of, you know, covers up a few things. And I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. But that is your card for NXT No Mercy. Taking place Saturday. Six matches, possibly seven. Seventh with the pre-show, likely, but not a bad card. Almost every match involves somebody that was on the main roster. Butch, Baron Corbin, Becky Lynch, Dominic Mysterio. All right, before we get into Wrestle Kingdom, something went down on AEW Dynamite Wednesday night that I have to throw my idea out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's something that I immediately thought about. And it has to do with Adam Cole, MJF, and a few others, and Jay White. Now, Jay White had a confrontation with MJF earlier in the show that's going to lead to an upcoming title defense by MJF against Jay White. Okay, fine. We also know that MJF is defending the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships on his own against the Righteous. Okay. And we talked about Adam Cole already. Now, we saw a video where a couple of men, three men, were beating down on Jay White. The men were all dressed in black. They were wearing masks, didn't say a word, but they were beating down Jay White in the back. That's how they closed out Dynamite. After the beatdown, someone else shows up wearing MJF's devil mask. And to insinuate that it was MJF that showed up and went off the air. Now, a lot of people realized right away this was not MJF. Whoever it is has a very small upper body. Now, when you think about wrestlers in AEW that have smaller upper bodies, main event stars, yes, there are wrestlers that have small upper bodies, but is there any names that come to mind that people have gone out of their way to talk about their physiques? Yeah. First person that comes to mind is Adam Cole. And I'm wondering if Adam Cole was the one wearing the devil mask and he's not actually injured, and the masked men were the Kingdom and Roderick Strong. Now, the big asterisk is MJF is defending the tag titles by himself at Wrestle Kingdom. If he loses and we find out later on that Adam Cole was not injured, is this going to be a split between Adam Cole and MJF? Or was this all a ploy and MJF felt that he could beat the Kingdom all by himself and Adam Cole tried to take care of business with Jay White? Either way, I get this strange feeling. Some people said it was retribution. you actually could have members of retribution, because most of them are released, if you think about it. But no, I have a feeling that this is Adam Cole under the mask. And I think it could very well be the Kingdom and Roderick Strong. We'll see. We shall see. All right, Wrestle Dream, taking place this Sunday, October 1st. $49.99, the average price for this pay-per-view. I'm not a cheapskate, but I am not spending $50 for this. It looks like a solid card. If you like the wrestlers involved, this is obviously an event that you buy. Storyline advancement, a little bit here, a little bit there, but it's a card that seems put to, this kind of reminds me of like a Saudi Arabia card. You know, like some matches that make sense, some matches that are put together for the sake of putting them together. But 10 matches announced as of right now, and let's get into them. Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. This is a dream match for a lot of people. I know a lot of people think the name Wrestle Dream sounds kind of goofy, but, you know, it's got that little bit of a Japanese feel to it, you know, and it should, because it's a tribute show to Antonio Inoki. And it's a nice little, I have no issues with the name Wrestle Dream. It feels very sudden, suddenly put together. But a lot of AEW's pay-per-views are like that. Think about All In and think about how late it took them before they started announcing, you know, some big matches for that card. I will take note, once again, there is only one women's match on this entire card of 10. So, you know, that's something you always got to keep in the back of your mind. You know, whenever we talk about women's wrestling, and we talked about, you know, Jade Cargill's utilage and even Chris Statlander's current run, which is kind of mirroring Jade Cargill's, you know, as each event goes by and you see the extreme lack of women's wrestling, you know, should you be surprised when you see someone like Jade Cargill leave and maybe others in the future? But Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. is a dream match. Bryan Danielson is on somewhat of a roll since his return, and I personally can't see him losing this match. I'm going with Bryan Danielson to take it. Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland, straight up one-on-one match. This is an interesting match that they put together. I think down the line, we will see a little bit more of the Mogul Embassy and the Elite battle. And this is kind of like a hybrid of it. And this is going to be a phenomenal match. And to me, it's a great rub for Swerve Strickland. And for me, I would love to see Swerve Strickland take this match. You see so many people online who, when they talk about Swerve Strickland, they think he should be in the main event. They think he should be down the line AEW world champion. And it would be great to see him get put in that main event level on a permanent basis. Not that he has to close out every event, but there's some names that you could slot into a main event and you're cool with it. You know, you look at even people in the WWE like Drew McIntyre or Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens or even a Sheamus to an extent. You know, you have an event and you want to slot one of those guys into a pay-per-view, you know, main event or semi-main event or co-main event. It's not that out of the ordinary. I think Swerve Strickland has earned that. Now the question is, you know, does he get the smoke and mirrors push? Or does management actually, are they solidly behind Swerve going to the next level? You know, I don't know how much time Swerve Strickland has left in his AEW contract, but that's one guy I personally think WWE would really love to have back. Let's see how they use Swerve. Let's pay closer attention. He is not one that will disappear like they did with Hobbs or Wardlow or Miro or Andrade or others in the past, that they get a little bit of a, you know, TV run, leads to a pay-per-view, and then they disappear for a month. That hasn't happened with Swerve, so I have a little bit more confidence with Swerve. So I'm going with him to beat Hangman Page. Now, keep in mind, we always have to worry about outside interference, you know, clusterfucks. That happens aplenty in AEW, so some of these one-on-one matches, they're not going to end very clean. FTR will be defending the AEW World Tag Team Championships against Aussie Open. Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, I'm going with FTR to retain, and I am going with FTR to retain for the simple reason of another match that is coming up a little bit later. Sometimes you got to think one step ahead. On this show as well, they have the Young Bucks versus the Guns, versus the Lucha Bros, versus Orange Cassidy and Hook. It's a four-way tag team match to determine a new number one contender. I shouldn't even say new number one contenders. They're using a little bit different wording now. For a future World Tag Team Championship match. Future tag team championship. It's not even a number one contenders match. All that four-way does is determine who gets a title shot in the future, pretty much whenever AEW wants to announce it. Which, on the surface, you say to yourself, wait, you know, FTR has taken on, you know, numerous tag teams on Collision the last month. They didn't win any four ways to get a title shot. What makes this any different? And I agree. I'm kind of surprised that they decided not to go the number one contenders route. So now, if they did the number one contenders route, you kind of feel like the Young Bucks would be the favorites. Maybe the Guns. I don't think the Lucha Bros, especially with Rey Fénix now holding the international championship unexpectedly. And the team of Orange Cassidy and Hook sounds fun, but I don't know if I would, you know, put them in that position. But the fact that FTR, I believe, is going to retain. You look at these four tag teams, the Guns versus FTR absolutely could be revisited. The Lucha Bros versus FTR, you could announce that on a Collision. You really don't even have to, you know, have a build-up for that. Orange Cassidy and Hook is another match that you could just put out there on TV and you don't have to even justify that. So really, for me, it comes down to the Young Guns, the Young Bucks, or the Guns. I know a lot of people are going with the Young Bucks to take this, but I'm kind of leaning towards the Guns simply because the Guns, they're starting to get respect from fans. They're starting to get respect from fans. And them winning a high-profile match to get a future title shot, it feels more earned and not just given randomly. So even though, like I said, the Young Bucks are the favorites to win this, I'm going to go with the Guns. I think the Guns versus FTR one more time, I think crowd would be fine with that. The guns have improved tremendously over the last 12 months, being with Bullet Club Gold. Definitely enhanced their value. They got a cool little entrance, and they work great in the ring. And look at their father's legacy. You know, he's taught them well. So I'm going with the guns. All right, MJF defending the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships in a handicap match against the Righteous, Vincent and Dutch. A lot of people feel that the Righteous should have some type of Ring of Honor gold, and I agree wholeheartedly. MJF is still the world champion. MJF really does not need the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championship. Even if he loses this title on Sunday, it doesn't necessarily mean that Adam Cole absolutely needs ankle surgery. He could. He could. Maybe it's not as serious as they played it off on TV. Maybe he just needs to get it scoped. I don't know. But I personally do not think MJF needs to hold on to Ring of Honor Tag Team Gold. And I'm going to go with the Righteous to defeat MJF. I think there will definitely be interference. So it seems like it's not a clean victory. So it does not hurt MJF. You know, we got to get out of this idea that the biggest names on the cards can't lose. You look at Roman Reigns. Some people feel if Cody Rhodes gets pinned, oh, he's not finishing the story. You know, why does someone have to be undefeated for the foreseeable future? Roman Reigns is a little different. He's got championships. But, you know, not every main eventer, you know, not every leader of a company has to be undefeated to keep that reign, to keep that title, to keep that aura about themselves, their spot. So I'm going to go with the Righteous to win those Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships. And then we just got to pay close attention on Adam Cole's reaction to all of this. And then we start thinking, you know, are we seeing a setup being built in the process? Or did Adam Cole, maybe he needs, like I said, some minor surgery? You know, just because he stood up, if he was the one under that mask, doesn't mean that his ankle isn't hurt. So he could still have done what he did. I don't know. We'll wait and see. Or you could even do another swerve. Have all the masked men come, excuse me about my voice. As you can hear, I'm exhausted. I sound like I'm a little under the weather. I'm okay. But little nasal right now. But you could have the masked men come out and beat down on the Righteous. MJF gets the win and he looks a little bit confused. Could do that too. But I'd rather see the Righteous get those tag titles. Christian Cage defending the AEW TNT Championship against Darby Allin, 2 out of 3 falls match. You know, last week Christian Cage won the TNT Championship, which a lot of us, you know, thought would happen, and it did. I don't see any reason to take the title off of Christian Cage this quickly. Christian, you know, pretty much acting like the champion while Luchasaurus had the belt was a lot of fun. And I personally don't think there's any reason to change that right now. As much as I like Darby Allin, Christian Cage is going to win this. 2 out of 3 falls. I don't think a DQ will be involved in any of them. Luchasaurus, will he get involved? Will Sting get involved? Will nobody get involved? I'm going with Christian Cage to retain. Chris Statlander defending the TBS Championship against Julia Hart. Once again, as I said earlier, this is the only women's match on this card. Chris Statlander's run so far, and it's not a knock on Chris Statlander, feels so Jade Cargill-ish. The format of how she gets her opponents and what transpires right before, what transpires right after, it is mirroring Jade Cargill completely. Chris Statlander will retain the TBS Championship. I think this match will get a little bit longer time than normal. Julia Hart has improved in the ring tremendously. She's got a great intro, a great look. She has adapted to her character. And I think this will be a nice, fun little match. And I'm a little surprised. This is the only women's match announced for this card. And please don't say to me, well, New Japan, their main show doesn't do that much women's wrestling. Yeah, but they're doing a tribute show to Antonio Inoki. They don't have to use his mindset that only one women's match should be on the card. Chris Statlander will retain. Let's see if anybody shows up to set up a new storyline feud, mini feud, whatever, with Chris Statlander, or we just have the match and we move on. So this leaves us with three remaining matches. Ricky Starks versus Wheeler Yuta. Drinking some coffee. Wheeler Yuta. As much as I try to become a fan of his, I'm still not. You know, Blackpool Combat Club, you know, he did decent with. Still, you know, doing his thing. For some reason, I just can't get invested in Wheeler Yuta. It's an intriguing match. And Wheeler Yuta, I guess, coming off more as the babyface here or the no-nonsense, you know, babyface. Ricky Starks has been, there's been this feeling that Ricky Starks has been elevated. At the end of the day, Ricky Starks is losing way too many matches. I think Ricky Starks has to get the win over here. Where it leads from here, I don't know. You know, we think Ricky Starks, Bryan Danielson, could that continue further? I don't think so. I think that Texas death match should have been the end of it. Ricky Starks, it's going to be curious to see who he feuds with next. But he's got to get this win over Wheeler Yuta. And we go from there as far as momentum goes. He definitely needs to get this win. We got Eddie Kingston defending the Ring of Honor World and Strong Openweight Championships against Katsuyori Shibata. Now, Eddie Kingston winning the Ring of Honor World Championship was very, very cool. For a lot of people here in New York, it's a little personal because Eddie Kingston, his dedication to pro wrestling for 20 years, I brought this up very recently. When I saw him show up in NWA, it really put a smile on my face because it felt like he was finally getting recognized a little bit more. And then they gave him a shot in AEW, and yes, for a long time, it felt that he was being underutilized. I still will say, even though it might be selfish, that you see some names winning Ring of Honor gold, AAA gold, New Japan gold, but they don't win AEW gold. I want to see a championship with the letters AEW on it with Eddie Kingston. Not the FTW title, not the TNT title. I want to see a tag title or a heavyweight title. Not now, obviously, but having a Ring of Honor championship, that's cool and everything for legacy and for Ring of Honor's lineage, but I don't know how much they've really changed in the view of Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston will remain in AEW for the foreseeable future. And I personally feel, because this is such an inspirational story of him getting to this spot, having both of those championships, I think he retains against Shibata. I could see Shibata taking both of those titles, but I don't see Shibata being Ring of Honor world champion at this moment. Let Eddie Kingston have a multiple-month run. You know, you could have just had the Strong Openweight Championship on the line, especially since the dedication to Inoki. Eddie Kingston did not have to put that Ring of Honor World Championship on the line. I think the fact that he's putting both titles on the line tells me that he is going to retain. So we're not going to see much in the title change department. You know, if you really think about it, outside of, for me, the Righteous, I think should get those Ring of Honor tag titles against MJF. So that leaves us six-man tag match of Chris Jericho and the Golden Elite, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi. They're going to take on the Don Callis family of Konosuke Takeshita, Will Ospreay, and Sammy Guevara. Now, Sammy Guevara just turned on Chris Jericho, joining up with Don Callis. Tonight's little change. I mean, that group obviously feels a little bit forced, but Don Callis is great in his role. Don Callis, really, really good in this role, and Don Callis obviously has a lot of angst towards Kenny Omega. Conan! Conan! I still haven't put that as my ringtone. I got to put that in my ringtone, and then one day just be in the post office and somebody calls me up and my phone goes off and all you hear in the background is, Conan! he obviously has a lot of anger towards Kenny Omega, anger towards Chris Jericho. Kota Ibushi, I don't think he gives a fuck as much. It's an interesting tag team match, and there's many ways to go, but I think the fact that Chris Jericho beat Sammy Guevara the last time around, and Takeshita, you know, everybody has got their jets behind Takeshita except for Tony Khan. You know, I'm enjoying Takeshita's run in AEW. I tell you, you know, when he first came in, you know, felt like just another spot monkey, but he's got a little bit of an attitude about himself. You know, you believe it or not, a dream match, a wrestle dream match that I would actually get a kick out of seeing right now, Takeshita versus Nakamura. I think that would be a pretty fun match to see happen in Japan. Now, I don't know if they've faced each other in the past, and if they have, you know, that's cool. But I got to go with Takeshita, Guevara, and Will Ospreay. And Sammy Guevara could use a little win over here. I mean, it's not leading to any push right now, but Takeshita would get a nice little high-profile win. Kenny Omega, you'd be surprised how many losses that he does take. You know, the Young Bucks have had their share of losses recently. Who would have ever thought that they would have lost it all in? Let's be honest. You know, so that's the only reason why I feel like I could see the Young Bucks, you know, getting the match, but you know, in their four-way, but they could be announced the title match anytime. And you know AEW is going to do another tournament in the near future for Tag Team Gold. Plus, you know, something I want to leave you with to think about. Trios titles. You know, Claudio Castagnoli just lost the Ring of Honor heavyweight title. Bryan Danielson has no championship. Jon Moxley, we hope, will be back in short order. As soon as I heard that Claudio lost the Ring of Honor World Championship and the House of Black lost the Trios titles not too long ago, my immediate thought was, okay, when the House of Black first lost, I said, okay, what's going to be the next interesting big feud that could lead to a title change involving the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn? And, you know, I thought about the Mogul Embassy. I thought about others. But the minute Claudio lost the Ring of Honor World Championship, I said to myself, I know some people are saying right now, well, DT, even if Mox can't go, you could put Wheeler Yuta in that spot. No. If you get a Trios gold, I would like to see Danielson, Claudio, and Moxley with Trios gold. And I could absolutely see the Blackpool Combat Club feuding with the Acclaimed in the very near future. If they plan on getting that belt back on Moxley, the international title, sooner than later, then yeah, you could have Bryan Danielson, Claudio, and Willie Yuta team up, get Trios gold, Moxley as the international title, and those four all have championships. No, I don't think it's a copy of the Judgment Day, you know, that a faction has all the gold. You know, it is cool for any faction, whether it's a group of three or a group of four, maybe even a group of five, you know, it's which is rare. to see them all with gold, but it's always cool for a faction to have championship gold, everybody. It elevates their status, even if they're not being elevated. Just the visual of it. So I'm going to go with Takeshka, Guevara, and Ospreay. And Kenny Omega, I think, eats another loss. And who knows, down the line, we may see Hangman Page and the Young Bucks feuding with the Acclaim for the Trios titles. If the Young Bucks don't win this match, they could get slotted right into the Trios title picture with Hangman Page. So there's definitely a few ways they could go with this. But for this card, I got to go with Takeshka, Guevara, and Ospreay. You know, pretty solid card. I can't complain about it. It's just not something that I feel is must-see, tune in, spend $50. Even if I got it for free, of course, I'll watch some of the matches. I want to see. Some of these matches definitely look solid. But, you know, listen, when you get used to the 24/7 channel that WWE used to have, and then you had the WWE Network, and now you got Peacock, and you pay $9 a month or $5 a month, and you get, you know, WWE pay-per-views, it's not, you know, you don't want to as much to dump $50, $60 on a wrestling pay-per-view, especially when you get two or three of them in a matter of a month's time. You think about All In, you think about All Out, and then you think about Wrestle Dream. You know, you're asking fans to dump $150 in a very short amount of time for AEW. And with the reports that Andrew Zarian has put out, and a lot of it appears to start being confirmed about it, AEW is moving to a 12 pay-per-view lineup next year. Now, that might be a little deceiving, because is that AEW branded? Ring of Honor branded? You know, aha! And you start looking at it like that. I mean, I haven't added up how many AEW pay-per-views they had this year between them and Ring of Honor, but it's got to be close to 12, I would think. So if AEW were to have 7 pay-per-views next year and Ring of Honor were to have 5, you know, that doesn't sound like much of a difference. I get this feeling, though, where Andrew Zarian's going with this, is that AEW-branded pay-per-views will be extended to 12. And I'll tell you this. I'll leave you with this to go off the air. And I also got to tease something else. It'll be funny. It has to do with Wembley. I wasn't going to bring it up, but, yeah, we could bring it up. Why not? AEW, if they go to a 12 pay-per-view lineup for AEW-branded pay-per-views, that is going to change the landscape of how we see stuff on TV. You will see a substantial difference on how Dynamites are presented. And the reason why I say that is when you have AEW not have a pay-per-view, let's say for 3 months, it is not easy, especially for AEW, to have anybody feuding for 3 months leading into a pay-per-view. You know, the shelf life of a feud in AEW for most people is very, very short. So how do you lead to a pay-per-view match with a 3-month feud without having, you know, matches on TV? Many times we will see a title match on Dynamite. We will see a tag title match on Dynamite. And, yeah, that happens on WWE TV as well. But you get matches on Dynamite that you say, wow, this should have been a pay-per-view match. Wow, you know, this match, I should be pay-per-view. But when you're not having a pay-per-view for 3 months, you have some feuds that come and go, and they end up never making pay-per-view. Now, if you have a pay-per-view almost every month, you know, now you got 3 weeks to set up feuds that are leading to a specific pay-per-view, and then the go-home show is where everything gets into a little bit of chaos. So every month, you're going to see things churn a little bit differently. It won't feel... Yeah, and listen, it may also tighten up their storylines. You know, I don't want to use Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland as an example, but it was the most comedic one in recent memory. When it, like 9 months later, they still didn't have their rival match. You know, if we had an AEW pay-per-view every single month, you best damn believe that Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee would have had a pay-per-view match the moment Keith Lee returned to TV. But because there was no pay-per-view right around the corner at that time, it was just like, oh, he's now aligned with Goldust and this and that. And you could look at others as well. You know, that you see a feud, then it disappears. You don't see much mention for 2-3 weeks. And then suddenly it gets brought up again. And then you get the bullshit match on TV. And, you know, then it's kind of like put it the wayside for 2 more weeks. And next thing you know, 2 months go by, 2.5 months go by. And then it finally leads to a pay-per-view match. But by that time, you're like, wow, you know, this feud has been really a mess. And having a pay-per-view every single month, I think, will resolve some of that problem. Okay. Before I go off the air, got to share with you something funny. You know, we all feel for Will Ospreay and his 81,035 tattoo that he had on his arm to commemorate Wembley and history. And that is the number AEW put out during All In at Wembley. And we all have seen the video by now, Will Ospreay, how his mother, as he said it, fucking hates tattoos. And he put it on his arm. And then we find out through Freedom of Information request that the actual number in attendance was 72,265. Now, there's a little controversy going on right now. And I'll tell you why. Somebody put out a screenshot of an email where claims that somebody from the UK and a council that answers Freedom of Information requests sent an email to an individual who was asking about the attendance at Wembley. And this individual... And Saturday, I'll show you the screenshot of the email. I can't do it here because it's audio only. But just to sum it up, this person that works in the UK claims, granted a Freedom of Information request, that the actual attendance for Wembley was 85,528. 4,500 more than what even Tony Khan announced. So now everybody that is just whacked out about, you know, AEW must beat WWE in their attendance records is now thinking 85,528 is the number. I will tell you right off the bat, I'm a little bit skeptical about this email that came out, because when you usually request information, you know, especially for specific reasons, you're usually assigned a case number, a tracking number, a reference number. And when I saw the screenshot of this email, I saw nothing of the sort. It was just simply like somebody sent an email to someone and somebody emailed them back and threw out a number there. I do know that a lot of journalists in wrestling have emailed this individual to see if this is true or not. This number. Now, I will tell you this. It's already been 24 hours, almost 36 hours, and none of these journalists have received a reply. I promise you that whoever this person is in this email is not getting tens of thousands of emails, that this has to be something that you got to wait a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks for an answer. And I don't think that the person would be an asshole to say, oh, listen, if you want the answer, you have to put in a Freedom of Information request. You could simply just respond back and say, yes, that number is correct. But like I said, if you look at the email, it looks like an email that you and I could type up. I'm a little skeptical about this number. And look, 85,528, could that be including all employees, people that work the stadium, security, vendors, outside, this personnel, or AEW's? Sure. Sure. You could add everybody, and that could very well be the number. But I'm very skeptical based on how the email was written, it looked fake to me. But suddenly, 85,528 is now the number that people, that's it. That's good enough to me, for me. I buy it. I buy it completely. So to be continued. So the thumbnail that I did, I was going to save this thumbnail for Saturday's show, but I think for Saturday we got to focus more on Fastlane, especially if LA Knight makes his return, is well enough from battling COVID, and he ends up being announced as Cena's partner for Fastlane. Plus, we got to see some other news. Roman Reigns, told you. I made a prediction that Roman Reigns would be back on TV in 2 weeks. We should get an announcement Friday. If not, you will see it on next week's TV, that Roman Reigns will be back on television October 13th. October 13th. Had to happen. So that's something else we will talk about this weekend. So I hope you enjoyed this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I wanted to keep it to just a handful of topics so it's easier to navigate, make the show a little bit, you know, lighter to enjoy. And if you, whether you're tuning in to NXT No Mercy or AEW Wrestle Dream or both, I hope you enjoy them. I am absolutely going to be watching NXT No Mercy. I will ultimately watch Wrestle Dream. I just don't believe I'm going to be watching it live. In fact, I'm going to be doing a sit-down episode during that time. So if any of you out there that is not going to be tuning into Wrestle Dream live, you're welcome to join me Sunday night at 8.05 p.m. Eastern for the sit-down. We'll have a fun show there. So, I'm going to go get my ass some sleep. Everyone, it's been real. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be back with your next edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite next Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. Be well, everyone. Talk to you all soon.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.